You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. We're on the program to put some money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing as the countdown is on to the start of the Major League Baseball regular season. Spring training has begun. The NHL trade deadline rapidly approaches. We've got college basketball, March Madness right around the corner. We're hitting it all on the program this afternoon. Steve Merrill steps up and in as he normally does. We'll run the gauntlet with Steve. Little NASCAR, little Oscars, and some basketball talk with Steve Merrill. We're talking pucks with a man that knows a thing or two about the NHL trade deadline. Former general manager of the Columbus Blue Jackets, head coach of the Jackets, former head coach of the Florida Panthers, Doug McClain steps up and in and joins us. We talk some pucks with Doug McClain. We talk fantasy basketball with Tony Cincata as well. All right, so as I said, we got a ton of stuff to get to on the program. March Madness rapidly approaching. Conference tournament action actually starts this week. Can't wait to start breaking that down with Mark Lawrence, Dave Malinsky, and everybody else. We're going to continue our Major League Baseball previews as the week goes on. We'll continue to shake things up right here on the Fantasy Sports Network. But as I stated, spring training has begun. Hope springs eternal. The crack of the bat, the smell of the hot dogs and the popcorn and everything else in between. As Major League Baseball's regular season, now a little more than a month away, it's rapidly approaching. And spring training, you know, the theme of spring training basically is, you know, the dudes' names, you don't know who they are, and you see in the transactions list, or at least, well, nobody reads sports pages anymore, right? But remember the old days when there were actual sports pages and there was like a transactions list? You just see this name, Carl Smith, released by New York Mets. You're like, I don't give a crap. Who the hell's Carl Smith? Yeah, whatever. Well, these guys that are transactions, they're actually, you know, they're real people. These are their lives. So spring training means we've got hotshot prospects, you know, trying to crack the bigs, prove to the manager and the general manager they can be everyday big league players. You know, you've got your veterans, guys that have been around a while that they're trying to phase out, pay less and play less. But these guys have mortgages. These guys have a couple of ex-wives. These guys are trying to hang on for another year or two. You got your journeymen, guys that have been tweeners back and forth in between the minors and the bigs, hoping to score that one-way contract, at least to get a big fat payday on the way out. And then you have Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow reported to the New York Mets camp. Hey, why not? Was Johnny Manziel going to try out for the Dallas Stars? Like, did these people not pay attention to CM Punk? Like, listen, if Michael freaking Jordan couldn't just walk into Major League Baseball and succeed, why the hell does Tim Tebow think that he's going to walk into Major League Baseball and succeed? The whole thing's a sham. And I got nothing against Tim Tebow. The guy's a good guy. He's a great guy. It's hard not to like Tim Tebow. I didn't like him so much when I lost $12,000 on the over the national championship game between Oklahoma and Florida, Sam Bradford versus Tebow. I was actually there. I was there with the Raging Redhead Cam Stewart. We were sitting right next to Isaiah Thomas. I got kicked out in the third quarter out of disgust when I realized the game was not going over the number. There's my Tim Tebow story. But I don't dislike Tim Tebow. How can you not like Tim Tebow? But the fact of the matter is, you know, there's some dude that's paid his dues, man. Guy's been grinding, playing baseball, grinding away in the organization, just trying to get a couple of at-bats to show the Mets organization that he can at least make the minor league organization. But no, let's give some at-bats to Tim Tebow. They've set up a booth with Tim Tebow stuff. You know, I was reading the New York Post. Supposedly you can't get a Granderson jersey, you can't find a Syndergaard jersey anywhere, but, oh, they got Tim Tebow jerseys for sale. You know, you're the New York freaking Mets, man. Like, you guys don't need, like, the attention or the publicity. You know, Tim Tebow played in the Arizona Fall League. You know what his batting average was? .194. How many players that are hitting .194 in the freaking Fall League? Oh, he's got potential, man. I keep on reading how fast he is. Very impressive how fast he is. So, is he going to be a pinch runner? You know, very, especially for his size. That's what all the scouts, baseball kid. Oh, you know, he's really fast for a really big guy. Tim Tebow weighs like 255 pounds right now, evidently. Really fast. You know, last time I checked, like, is size a requirement in baseball? Like, You know, what I don't really understand is Tim Tebow knows, all right? He knows everything. You know, next to Jesus, nobody knows more than Tim Tebow. He knows it all. So he can already see the future, and he knows he's not going to be part of the New York Mets. He's not going to be playing in the bigs this year. But he also knows that he just signed a big-time money contract with Adidas. Now, I'm not really sure what Adidas is paying Tim Tebow for. Like, it's not like he's an actual athlete or he does anything. And as good as Tim Tebow is, he sort of half-asses everything, doesn't he? You know, I thought he was a broadcaster on the SEC network. Is he? But no, I guess no. Now you're sort of a baseball player. What I don't really understand, Tim, if you're willing to grind it out in the Arizona freaking Fall League, man, when you're a multimillionaire and you're Tim Tebow, you're willing to grind it out in the Fall League. You're willing to take the buses and eat at Arby's and all that other crap. But you're not willing to be a tight end in a National Football League. You're 29 years old. You know, that's all I keep on hearing about Tim Tebow's baseball skills. Well, he's fast. He's what a freak athlete. But, you know, he can't hit a baseball. But, hey, that doesn't matter. You know, there's a graveyard. There's a graveyard filled with athletes who thought that they could be baseball players, man. Anybody remember Drew Henson? I remember Drew Henson. I'm a Michigan fan. You know, Drew Henson, you know, we wanted Tom Brady gone. We wanted Drew Henson to play at Michigan. Drew Henson was being talked about as like the greatest quarterback ever, all right? He was a slam freaking dunk, man, to be the top overall pick in the NFL draft. Instead, he took $5 million. Back then, it was a lot of money. George Steinbrenner said, hey, I heard you're a pretty good baseball player. I give you $5 million, but you got to join my organization right now. He did. What happened? He came crawling to the National Football League a couple of years later, and he was terrible. He lost his football skills. We can go on and freaking on, man. You know, Tony Romo's a good golfer, but he knows he's not good enough to be playing on a PGA Tour right now. And, you know, we've seen time and time and time again. CM Punk is a classic example. You know, Adam Jones brought it up. You know, Baltimore Oriole Adam Jones. He said, you know what? I was a pretty good football player in high school. Maybe I should go play in the National Football League. He was only joking. So you know what? They call the Major League Baseball, you know, the show. You make it on the team. Hey, congrats, kid. You just made it to the show. Well, it's a show, all right. It's a word that rhymes with it. It's an it show. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, we're fired up. We're starting a new week here on the Fantasy Sports Network. I think it's our anniversary coming up. What is it? Oh, it's this March 3rd. I thought it was in May, so it actually is, huh? So what's the budget? Are we hitting the dollar store? Are we getting some balloons or something? March 4th. No, what do you mean not a working day? Friday. Friday's our anniversary then here. All right, I guess I'll pay for the balloons myself. I'll send a bill to Cardano. You owe me 99 cents, you son of a bitch. All right, we got a great show. Doug McClain's going to join us. We're talking hockey with Doug McClain. We got Tony Cincata, and we got Steve Merrill right now. What's up, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, how you doing?
I'm all right, Steve. You know what? I actually had a pretty good night last night and yesterday. I've been in a little bit of a personal funk and professional funk. I just can't get on track, at least not to the standard that I'm used to, Steve. But I came out swinging yesterday, man. Underdog City. We've seen this in college basketball for the last couple of weeks. So yesterday I was like, you know what? I'm going to take the 5 points with UCF, but I think they can win this game outright. So I took them against Cincinnati. You know, Michigan State were getting plus 145, and they were only getting 3 points. I'm like, I'll take the money line instead of the points in this game. So I did a good job of hitting the underdogs yesterday. And even though I paid zero attention to the Oscar stuff, Steve, like literally and figuratively, you know, even in past years, I'd read previews about it just to sort of get a handle on how to bet it. I paid zero attention to it. I saw zero of these movies. But I hit a plus 280 and a minus 120 last night. I went 2-0 in the Oscars.
Yeah, I didn't turn it on. I usually check it just because of the odds. But yeah, it was interesting because La La Land was a pretty heavy favorite going in. I put on Twitter earlier in the day that the betting odds said 80% chance La La Land got best picture, 15% Moonlight. So Normally, those betting odds are pretty sharp, but we've seen in recent years where a couple of the favorites haven't panned out like people thought.
Well, you know what, Steve? I was monitoring this, and you know me. I'm a big political junkie and conspiracy theorist as well. So I have a twisted view of the world and why things happen. I never believe that anything is true or that there's a reason for everything. So I sort of just handicapped it like that last night. Casey Affleck. I knew there was a lot of hype about the movie. Was it Manchester by the Sea? I knew there was a lot of hype. It was an artsy type of movie, chick type flick. And I know that he allegedly sexually assaulted somebody or maybe date rape a couple of chicks or something like that a couple of years ago. And I figured, you know what? Hollywood loves people like this. Roman Polanski, Woody Allen. They're not going to hold it against him because I saw this story. Affleck did the best job, but his sexual past, you know, you can't give him an award. And when I saw that, I'm like, oh, Hollywood will give the sexual pervert an award for sure. And they did. And then when Moonlight, I saw that it was about two black guys and adopting a baby and stuff like this. And in the era of Donald Trump, how can Hollywood stick it to Trump more than saying the best movie of the year is two black dudes adopting a gay, two gay dudes adopting a baby? It was a slam dunk, Steve. So my twisted logic paid off.
Yeah, I like that handicapping method, actually. And then you look at La La Land, the favorite was, what, like 1940s or 1950s when everything was white, and Hollywood hates that, obviously.
Exactly,
exactly. That was the evil press of 1950s in this country, so that's an interesting theory.
La La Land would be a type of movie Trump would have liked to see win. That's a nice, clean picture. Yeah, like, what do you think Trump enjoys more, Moonlight or La La Land? But in all seriousness, Steve, and I used to use this for the Grammys, too. You sort of think, like, you know, all right, like Bonnie Raitt once won like 10 Grammys one year. You know, like they sort of had, oh, let's make this girl a star. She's been around for a while. There's always an angle for this stuff. But so last night, Steve, I got money on the Clippers game. All right, I'm doing well. I'm rolling last night. So I got that gambling vibe going. I'm clicking, watching Washington State, the Clippers game. And I'm like, Casey Affleck wins. And I didn't know until I saw my account pop up. I'm like, oh, he must have won. So I'm like, what about Moonlight? So I pop in a couple of times. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. I finally tune in at the right time. And I see like the, and for best movie. So like, I couldn't even watch that, Steve. So I'm going back and forth, like clicking 10 times back and forth. The Clippers game was in overtime. I'm going back and forth. Finally, Warren Beatty gets up there. And he starts mumbling and stuff. Oh, the best movie. And I'm thinking, just get to it, old man. Like, seriously, dude. Announced the winner. But in hindsight, poor guy, they gave him the wrong card. So he was like, he didn't know what to do. He looks and he's like, this is the wrong card. So he's trying to buy time. And finally, they announced the wrong winner. I watched the Oscars so little, I didn't even see the mistake, Steve. I said, ah, son of a bitch, I lost with Moonlight. And I went right back to the basketball game. And then I saw my account get loaded up. And I was like, hey, what happened? And then I find out they screwed it up.
Yeah, that's another Donald Trump conspiracy, because wasn't he still in charge when Miss Universe said the same thing with Steve Harvey? So there you go. There's connections all around.
Yeah, I'm already in the term fake Oscar. I'm already tired
fake
of
Oscar, yeah.
Fake Oscars. We had the Oscars. I cashed. I did not cash with the NASCAR. We warned people. We know going in these plate races, Talladega and Daytona, they're real crapshoots. And yesterday was just insane, man. A lot of big names got wiped out.
Yeah, it was, as I'm watching that race yesterday, I'm thinking to myself, this is the textbook example of what we talk about every year with the restrictor plate tracks, why it's almost a roll of the dice and why you just have to take some long shots. You know, Kurt Busch went off as high as 25-1 at some sports books. He didn't lead a single lap until the final lap of the race. However, you know, but he's been in position before. What's funny, if you look at restrictor plate results, average finish, you know, ratings, he's probably one of the top 10 restrictor plate drivers on the circuit right now, yet he had never won in over 60 starts at Talladega or Daytona. So in hindsight, not a complete surprise that he won at that price. But the big takeaway for me was just the carnage. Over half the drivers were not even on the lead lap when the race finished. 15 of the 40 were out of the race, I believe. And some real big names, Earnhardt and Kyle Busch, they go out basically at the front of the pack because Kyle Busch just spins out, his tire goes down and takes out a half the field. And then, you know, some other big names like Johnson and some other guys like that, Keselowski, who was a favorite. Just shows why this race is so random. They've got the new stage format. And what's interesting is I don't think there is a single caution during the first 120 laps from stage one or stage two, except for the 60 and the 120 caution for this new rule. I like the fact they're racing back for the top 10 to get some extra points and whatnot at each stage. It makes the middle of the race a little more entertaining. What I don't like, though, is that they just arbitrarily, you know, throw a caution at the end of each stage. I mean, we already have enough cautions in these races, and all that does is drag it out for another 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the drivers are not a fan of this stage stuff. And I was surprised how aggressive people were getting. And, you know, they commented on that during the race, actually, earlier in the race. I don't know who it was that stated it, but, like, he's like, guys, there's half the race left. I don't know why they're doing this. Why are they trying to pass each other? Why are they so aggressive right now? First race of the season, drivers were pretty upset about it after the fact. Some drivers were blaming Goodyear. The tires suck. The tire rules, how long you can use the tires. There's, you know, how long you can fix the car, the five-minute rule right now. There was a lot of bitching, but they bitch every year whenever they tweak stuff. And you can't really take anything as far as anything of this race. I mean, it was a crapshoot. To me, it's almost like Atlanta's the first real race that we can grade, Steve.
Oh, no question about it. And the other thing I was thinking as I was watching this was, it's so ironic that this is the Super Bowl of racing, because basically it's a preseason game. And it's the equivalent of the first week in the NFL. We talk about it every year in September, that the first week translates less to the rest of the season. You know, we see the 49ers have a shutout win this year in week one. We see it happen every year where teams that end up winning like one game the rest of the season look good. It's the same thing in NASCAR. This race means absolutely nothing in the overall scheme of the races coming up on intermediate cookie-cutter tracks, super speedways like Atlanta, and half of the field coming up. One thing I will say about the new rule, though, I like the fact there's some incentive to race in the middle of the race. So I disagree with the drivers there. I think one of the problems with NASCAR is these races are too long, and that those middle 200 laps basically don't mean anything.
Good call.
You know, yeah, if there's some incentive to maybe, you know, pass somebody in the middle of the race, I like it. The other thing, too, about the tires, I like the fact that it makes things a little more difficult to drive, maybe limit the amount of pit stops or tires, because then there's more strategy, there's more skill involved. Because one thing I don't like about NASCAR now is that every one of these machines is exactly the same. Ford's had six top 10 finishes yesterday. However, I don't think there's any difference between Toyota, Ford, or Chevy as far as the cars go, because there's such templates now. Within half an inch, everything's the same.
Yeah, it's like who can cheat better without getting caught, right? Who can find that little adjustment and tweak this and that? That's why they have the inspections after the race. All right, Steve, let's jump in here and talk some college basketball. Virginia averted complete disaster, finally getting a win against NC State the other day. North Carolina beat them down a couple of, was it last week, a week and a half ago, whatever it was. Might have been last Saturday. Game stayed way under the number. This game scares me, man. I don't really have a strong opinion on this either side, but you follow the Cavs pretty closely. What's your take?
Well, I mean, something was definitely wrong with Virginia. They had three straight losses before that NC State win, and you can't really read too much into the NC State win because NC State's the most dysfunctional team in the ACC right now. With that said, though, it was still a 15-point road win, and I said something on my Richmond show Friday in Virginia that I had to see the Cavaliers win a game before I was willing to back them. I actually had them against Duke earlier a couple weeks ago. They were a 5-point home favorite in that game. They held the Blue Devils to 21 points at the half and still lost by double digits. As you mentioned, 9 days ago, they lost to UNC. They were only a 6-point road dog at UNC. Now they're a 3.5-point home dog. So you could definitely make a case there's some line value now with Virginia.
Virginia's last four games have gone under the number, and you know they've only gone over eight times this year. That's not a surprise, but I'll tell you what, the Tar Heels have been an under machine in their own right. 7-1-1 to the under in the last nine games. Totals was 132. It's been bet down to $1.30. Like I said, I'm shell-shocked. I'm out. I'm not touching this one. I am playing this next game. Good revenge spot here for Baylor. You know, I thought Baylor was overrated. I remember when they released their first ever, brackets. Remember a couple of weeks ago? Baylor was a one seed. I remember telling Malinsky, no way Baylor's a true one seed. Come on. Baylor aren't one of the top four teams in college basketball. That's ridiculous. Well, that's been proven now, but I think it's a good spot for them. TCU gave West Virginia all they can handle the other day. I'm upset I didn't play the Horned Frogs in that game. I like them, actually. 5-point home dogs. They lost 61-60. I think Baylor's in a good spot here.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Baylor's coming in with 21-point revenge from that loss in early January at West Virginia as a 5.5-point road underdog. And now they're getting points on a strong home court. We're getting into the last couple weeks, the last week for a lot of teams, you know, for regular season games. So these seniors really like to step it up at home. and you have revenge with a strong home court. It's a situation that usually works pretty well.
All right, Steve, so we got 2 minutes, which gives us enough time. We got two games left. Let's keep it in state. Steve George is from Virginia. Va-Tech laying a point to Miami. Both teams are hot. Both teams are getting into the tournament, but nevertheless, it's a big game. You know, nobody's complacent right now between these teams. They're both 20-8. Canes won earlier meeting, 74-68. But this Hokie team starting to score a little bit. Last three games, Steve, 91, 71, and 90-point outbursts.
Yeah, you know, I talked about Virginia struggling. The game that really started that three-game losing streak was actually an overtime loss at against Virginia Tech a few weeks ago. And Virginia Tech is 4-1 straight up, 4-0-1 against the spread their last five, which started with that UVA win. So it really kind of sent the two Virginia teams in opposite directions. Looks like a good spot for the Hokies here. Strong home court, 14-1 straight up at home this year, and with revenge, as you mentioned, from a six-point road loss earlier this month.
Yeah, a lot of revenge. Canes are 7-1 their last 8 against the Hokies. But as you stated, 14-1 on their home court, we're not laying points. Basically, it's got to win the game. And finally, in closing, we got a minute here. Oklahoma and Kansas, you and I were waiting for Oklahoma to get better. Just never happened. I think they're ready to tap out. I mean, I know it's kind of, it seems like a bad spot for Kansas. They clinched the Big 12 and all that, but they're gunning for a number one overall seed. They're just a juggernaut right now. I told you about there is always something. So the Jackson kid smashed the car up of a female player in some weird deal, but he's not even suspended tonight. I think this could get out of hand, and I don't see Oklahoma playing with a lot of fight. And it could be a looser game as well. I like the favorite in the over.
Yeah, we talked about Oklahoma being a play-on team about a month ago when they started getting some guys back, but then they lost a few in a row. I jumped ship. I really didn't use them since then. And they are just 1-9, actually 2-9, I think, their last 10. 2-8, 2-9, their last 11. But they won by 30 points on Saturday against a mediocre Kansas State team. So maybe that's a sign they haven't totally quit. A quick turnaround here, traveling just one day, though, in a hostile environment does concern you.
I think that might have been senior day, though. I'm not sure. I think it might have been their last home game, so that they stepped up. Hey, Steve, it's always a pleasure. Conference tournament action begins tomorrow. Some of the lower-tier conferences, so we'll talk about that on Friday. Look forward to it. Check Steve out over at ProSportsInfo.com, one of the coverage experts. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Gabe.
All right, there's Steve Merrill with us. We take a quick break. We cut back. Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues, as does the countdown to the National Hockey League trade deadline. Last week, it was the NBA. There was a lot of hype around the NBA trade deadline, and there was more smoke than fire when it was all said and done. And historically, there's been nothing but smoke when it comes to the NHL trade deadline. A lot of hype, a lot of talk, but, you know, a lot of deals, but usually not a lot of blockbusters. But it seems as though the action could be pretty fast and furious this week as it started over the weekend. Let's bring in a man who's going to be, I think he's going to be chained to a desk, and he's going to be locked in a studio on NHL trade deadline day this Wednesday. Former head coach of the Florida Panthers, coach and GM of the Columbus Blue Jackets, now on Sportsnet and Sportsnet trade deadline show, will be on all day long from 8 a.m. until 6 p.m. Doug McLean joins us. Doug, welcome to the Fantasy Sports Network. How you doing?
Great, Gabe. How are you?
Hey, we're doing good, Doug. So, hey, first thing, since we're on the Fantasy Sports Network, let me ask you, we've seen an influx of the analytics guys and younger guys, sort of numbers guys, arrive in the National Hockey League right now. Do you accept that, or are you an old school guy that says, I can tell by looking at a guy, I don't want to see all these numbers?
No, I think you have to have a combination. I mean, look, all the teams are using analytics, and all of them have an analytics department, and when push comes to shove, it's morphed into more of a tool. Like, some people want to make it seem a lot bigger than it is. Some people want to make everything happen because of it. But the teams typically work as a tool, and whether you like it or not, and whether the analytics people like it or not, it still comes down to the GM and the director of player personnel and the scouts making a call on whether they think a player can help their team in a certain role. And but for me, I think it's important to have it as a tool and to use it as a tool, but to get carried away with it can cause you lots of problems and cost you a lot of money.
Something that I don't think a lot of people are talking about enough, actually, is I would imagine is the headache of it just being a little bit different. This trade deadline day is like none other because we have an expansion draft coming up. And you know, I guess it just make, if I'm a general manager, I got to think, all right, how can I make my hockey team better right now? But at the same point in time, I'm not protecting this guy. I've got to worry about the Vegas draft coming up. So to me, it's just an added element that I'm sure has to be discussed by upper management over the next couple of days.
Yeah, I think the teams know exactly where they are and who they're going to expose and who they really know they're going to lose. I mean, do they want, you know, there's some teams that, you know, they're going to lose a decent player. And I think you come to grips with that. And right now, you go into this deadline with the primary focus on getting into the playoffs and having some success at playoff time and dealing with the expansion draft after the fact. They still have an opportunity to make some deals prior to that once they finish this and once just prior to the expansion draft. So I think the focus right now is they know potentially who they're going to lose or who they're going to lose. We've seen some teams acquire secondary, third type of guys. Bukowski is an example of a defenseman picked up, you know, that will be that could potentially be exposed because he qualifies. So it's twofold, but I think the primary focus right now is, okay, you know, can we pick up some unrestricted free agents, some restricted free agents that we're not worried whether we're going to lose them or not. We're not really concerned whether we're going to re-sign them or not, i.e. a Bishop, i.e. a Hansel. You know, I have no doubt that neither one of those will probably be signed by the teams that acquire them, and they're not worried about them in the expansion draft. But they're really looking, obviously, the Kings with Bishop to get in the playoffs because they're not sure on Quick's health 100%, and also Minnesota looking to go deep, not worried about the expansion draft with their particular guys. And then you see where they are after that, prior to the expansion draft, as to what type of soft deals they can make to get their house in order for the expansion draft. But right now the focus is on finding the Yurko types, the Brendan Smith types. Do you take a chance on a Vanek? Do you do some of these things without worrying at all whether you lose them? You know, they're not going to be lost in the expansion draft because they're unrestricted anyway. You know, if you acquire a guy that's got term, that's a whole different story. Like, does a Duchesne, does a Landeskog move? Probably. You know, with Montreal losing out on the Hansel, you know, I'm not sure they were that into it. The price was high, maybe too high for their liking. And, you know, maybe do they step out of the box and try to make a big deal on a Duchesne type of guy? So it'll be interesting to see any blockbusters like that could happen. Less of a chance, but more increasing your depth to win a round, to get in the playoffs and maybe go deep.
Yeah, that's the thing about Shattenkirk, as you mentioned, that I'm hearing, right. You know, he wants $40, $45 million. He turned down $42. So if that's not enough, that's kind of a turnoff if you're a GM thinking, I got to deal with this guy after, what, does he want $56 million from me? The Las Vegas odds makers, they've got the Minnesota Wild as the odds-on favorite to win the Western Conference. And they're actually co-favorites to win the Stanley Cup right now with the Washington Capitals. Yeah, the Capitals are favorite every year. They don't get there, but people fall for it and bet it anyways, Doug. But the Minnesota Wild, they're really all in right now. How much better are they? And everyone's going to talk about Hansel. 6'6" guys don't grow on trees at this time of the year. But what about a guy like White coming in here as well? They're, you know, a deep team, just got a little bit deeper. You know, are they a legitimate threat? What's your take? How much better are they right now?
Well, yeah, they're a threat. There's no doubt about it. And you're right. Washington and Minnie could be there. But then I watched the Chicago Blackhawks go into Minnie the last two times in the last 3 weeks and beat them at home in Minnie with Taves stepping up and Kane stepping up and Keith stepping up. So, you know, it's going to come down to Dubnyk. It's going to come down to Boudreaux. Boudreaux's had great regular season success.
Yep.
It hasn't translated to the playoffs. Does he get over that, you know, hump of winning in the playoffs? He, you know, I thought he should have beat Chicago a year ago in that series where he had them on the ropes and they let them get off. And there was major frustration after that series. Now, is it Bruce Boudreaux's fault? Is it Getzlaf's fault? Is it Perry's fault? Is it the goaltending fault? Man, and lots of blame to be spread around. So I look at Minnie, you know, with the Hansel pickup, they paid a big price. I mean, when you're giving up a first, second, and a fourth, conditional fourth to get a Hansel as a rental, you better have success in the playoffs. You better have a deep run. And, you know, they're poised to do that. So I like the move. The price, you know, it's going to end up being a late first-round pick, a late second-round pick. in all likelihood. So is it that big a price in a weak draft? Probably not, but you're still paying a hefty price for a rental. So Shattenkirk falls into the same category. If a team can acquire him and can take the money and can afford to re-sign him, then you pay a price. And if not, look what Bishop went for. Bishop, like, I listened to Stevie Y today, and I mean, he had no options. It was either make the L.A. deal, which to me was a really soft deal. I mean, come on, that is a soft deal for a number one goalie. Yeah, he's had injury problems. Yeah, he hasn't had great success in the playoffs, but he's gotten to the conference finals. He's done a pretty good job. But that, to me, is a situation where there was no market for him. And, L.A. didn't really need him unless quick. So what's the price point going to be for Shattenkirk? Are you going to overpay him? Are you going to do a Yandle-type deal that, for me, well, the Panthers like the deal. Nobody else likes it, but the Panthers like it. And you're sitting there, are you going to give this guy $7 million? I mean, seriously, that could come down as the next bad contract down the pipe. But you'd love to have him for the playoffs, I guarantee you that. But what price do you pay if you're not going to re-sign him? So that's going to be the dilemma for Doug Armstrong in the next couple of days.
Before I let you go, Doug, and enjoying talking pucks with you, the Montreal Canadiens, so they make the coaching change, and you know the market there. I'm from Montreal, so I know the roller coaster that exists there. And look, I mean, since 2003, they've hired or fired Therrien and Julien four times. But to me, there's some pressure on Bergevin here. You can't keep on letting coaches go till people say, hey, what, maybe it's the players. At some point, and you mentioned Matt Duchene. Duchene seems like a perfect fit for the Montreal Canadiens. But it seems to me that the Canadiens, you know, you look at Minnesota, they're like, all right, we're all in. I know the Canadiens aren't as close on the ladder, but the Eastern Conference, you can make the argument that it's open with the playoff format the way that it is. You know, the Canadiens just, to me, don't send that message that we'll do anything to get these guys because we got to win. Let's give something back to the base here. It's always, wow, they wanted too much. We came close, but we didn't want to pull the trigger on this. They did the PK deal, but it was a trade-off. Like, it was a one-for-one type of deal. They need to get a little bit better if they're serious about getting on a run here going into the postseason, Doug.
Well, I thought the Hansel deal was there for them, and you know, obviously Bergevin made the decision he didn't want to pay that price. But right now, what are they going to get? I mean, Sergachev is the guy that there's no doubt Sergachev would be the guy that Colorado would want in a Duchene deal. I mean, it's got to be a young defenseman. Can they talk him to taking a Beaulieu in that deal, maybe, and sweeten it from there? But right now, to me, the Duchene deal looks like it may be a tough one to make unless they part with some high-end prospects.
You know, Carey Price isn't getting in his prime forever, right, Doug? I mean, you've got Price. You've got to give him something, right?
Well, that's the thing. And, I mean, this is prime time for them right now. And, you know, I'd like to see them do something that's going to get them a little bit deeper in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see where this goes. But, I mean, Bergie's not going to pay a huge price. So...
All right.
We'll see. But he's not getting Duchene unless he pays a big price. He's not getting them, and I don't know if he's prepared to do it. Now, with Hansel going, does that up the ante? Does that put a little more pressure on them? Maybe. So we'll see. But you're right. I mean, if Price is going, they can go deep in the East. I mean, if Price is on his game and they tinker a little, they can give Washington all they can handle. I really believe that. If they tinker a little bit, get a little bit deeper, and Price stands on his head.
All right, finally, before we get you out of here, we won't hold you to it, you know, for those of us that like to bet on some futures and lay it down, we've been talking about, all right, it's a way, way too early Stanley Cup prediction. I'm thinking the way things are going in the sports world, Doug, you know, we had the Cubs and the Indians play. They both ended the curse. I never buy into the Capitals, but I'm starting to believe they might actually make the Cup this year. How about a Washington-San Jose final? And you mentioned the Blackhawks, too. They're sort of, no one talks about these guys anymore, but they seem to be peaking right now. And always a dangerous team right there. But what's your early prediction? Who's in the finals?
You know what? I don't mind your San Jose-Washington. It makes a lot of sense. You can't count the Blackhawks out. My problem is, are they deep enough? We saw them last year against St. Louis in the playoffs. They weren't deep enough to win that series. Simple as that. I know Elliott stood in his head the last couple of games, but they weren't deep enough at that time. Are they better now? I don't think they are, but I wouldn't count out the Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, Crawford group yet. Hossa, I wouldn't count them out. So So, you know, the Caps in the East should win it. The key for them is you need two centermen going to playoff time. What is Kuznetsov going to do?
Yeah.
I know he's come on great. He was abysmal the first half. He's come on great. He looks great. Last year he was a disaster in the playoffs, and he struggled with it all summer. They're really concerned about him. Where is Kuznetsov when it really counts? He should be ready to take a big step, and if he does, they're going to be tough to beat.
It's a great point. Everybody always blames Ovechkin for the Capitals' demises, but it's the rest of the team that doesn't step up. Doug, we got to get out of here. I know you're a busy man. You got to get some rest. The marathon, man. I know they're going to chain you to the desk for the next couple of days, so we appreciate you joining us on the program. Best of luck with the trade deadline show, man.
Anytime, bud. Take care.
There's Doug McClain with us talking some pucks. We shift gears. We keep it in the arena. We talk DFS, NBA next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. All right, this show is really flown by. So let's bring in the Tony Cincotta, Fantasy Sports Network's very own, to talk some NBA DFS. It's an interesting board tonight, Tony. Not, you know, there's a lot of star players, but there's no real position where everything's real deep. Like, it's a gamble tonight. It literally and figuratively is. You got to pick your spots. And as always, it's always difficult to find out who actually is going to be playing this time of the day, Tony.
Yeah, so there's a couple things we're waiting on tonight. Between 6 and 7, we'll find out. One, we got to make sure LeBron James is out of the lineup, then Kyrie Irving becomes an automatic play. Second, in Toronto, Kyle Lowry, I thought, had no chance of playing. Now this, you know, I'm reading some things that tells me he might be playing. Joseph would be an automatic play if Lowry's out tonight. So those two moves are big on what we're doing tonight in DFS.
Not to mention, I was taking a look at Klay Thompson. I was doing a lineup last night in the late, 2 in the morning type thing. And I'm like, yeah, Klay Thompson, because Durant's probably going to be out. Now suddenly Durant wants to play. Like, even me, Tony, I'm the old school hard ass. They should play 82 games. What do you need Durant for tonight? I thought the whole point, actually, of bringing these guys in, I would start rotating them out of the lineup a little bit, Tony, as the season went on. You know, they already clinched a playoff spot. How funny is that?
That's crazy. That game I was a little scared off with a 13.5-point spread, but if you see one of those guys out, it makes it better to play a Klay Thompson or Stephen Curry. It makes it a little easier to play. Imagine being a 13.5-point favorite on the road and you're worried about a blowout in that situation, which I was worried about. If Durant's out, it makes Thompson and Curry both definitely guys I'm looking at. Curry under 10,000 bucks without Durant in the lineup, I like that.
All right, and as far as the Sixers are concerned, so no Joel Embiid. No Ilyasova. Nerlens Noel's been traded. So it means minutes. Covington's been responding. We go down the list here. Of course, you know, you got Saric. Gerald Henderson, only $3,400 tonight. It's a leap of faith. He's not going to be heavily owned. But Gerald Henderson, you're going to get five times. You'll probably get seven times, maybe eight times back.
The problem I have with Gerald Henderson, a lot of these guys that are cheap at the shooting guard, is that he only gets points, right? I don't get any steals. I don't get any rebounds. So the guy's going to be on fire. Now, this game's interesting from the Philadelphia side because Saric is a guy that's on fire, put up big minutes, and putting up big numbers. And I think he'll be heavily owned. But what do you do with Covington? Like, he was so good at $5,000.
Yeah.
Now his price jumped up to $7,300. Do you still have the same confidence in him? I don't.
And Jahlil Okafor went off for 28 and 10, but he's too hard to trust. Like, I was looking at him like, but 58, you know, if Jahlil was like 52, 48, 49, all right. But 58, he has to deliver and play well, and he doesn't on a nightly basis. Let's talk about a guy, and this is a lineup correlation situation in which Chris Middleton didn't even travel. He's not playing tonight. So Middleton's back in Milwaukee. They go to Cleveland, which means Michael Beasley gets some playing minutes. And I've always been a Beasley fan. I was a Beasley fan back in his K-State days. And he's a little moody, but the guy's a professional basketball player. And he's a hell of a fantasy player, Tony. He's pretty much a fantasy, he's a point per minute guy. If he plays 30 minutes, he'll give you 30, 35 fantasy points.
Here's the problem in this game tonight. Without Middleton in this lineup, right, you're going to look at Beasley as a guy that's going to jump in, but don't sleep on Giannis Antetokounmpo. You want to talk about $10,000 players. His usage is going to go up in this game. There's nobody else to put the ball in the bucket. I think both these guys you put in together tonight. If you use Beasley, throw him in with Antetokounmpo and attack it that way. Out of the $10,000 players tonight, I like Antetokounmpo, I like Harden, and I like DeMar DeRozan if Lowry's out in that game tonight.
Yeah, and you know, DeMar, even with Lowry, he's so consistent. Like, he just, you know, he's a model of consistency. But you're right, that's kind of a weird situation. I think the Knicks, and what's the deal with Porzingis tonight? There's another one.
Looks like he's not going to play.
Exactly, and I'm glad, because I like Ibaka even more now without Porzingis, Tony.
I'll tell you right now, Serge Ibaka is a guy I thought was going to get kind of lost in this Toronto offense. The greatest thing for him, though, was to get a couple games in without one of the big guns in there like Kyle Lowry.
Yep.
He saw double-digit rebounds, double-digit points, 15 shots in his last game. I think the same thing happens to the Knicks. Who is going to cover him tonight? Lance Thomas is not going to cover Serge Ibaka.
You know, it's funny. We thought the same way, Tony. I'm a Raptor fan, too. And so Ibaka came over. I'm like, well, how is he going to fit in the offense? Where is he going to be? How many minutes is he going to get? It's going to be intriguing. Well, no. They've thrown him in the deep end of the pool. Because as you stated, they needed to win the game against the Celtics the other night. Kyle Lowry wasn't there. They were like, no, dude, you're playing. Like, in two games with the Raptors, he's played 70 minutes, Tony. Played 36 and 34 minutes. He's playing more than guys that have been there. He's like, no, he's on the court all the time. And tonight he's going to feast. When you look at that lineup the Knicks are throwing out there.
There's two front court matchups that are huge against teams that don't defend well. The Knicks don't defend front courts well, so Ibaka's there. And Dwight Howard, who is a guy I never have any confidence, because some games he just doesn't show up. But the Celtics can't defend big men at all. And Dwight Howard, if he's ready to go tonight, Dwight Howard will eat up that Boston front court.
I kicked the tires on. There was a couple of guys in this game that I was looking at. I was actually looking at Schroeder. Yeah. I was looking at Dwight Howard. I was looking at Jay Crowder, actually, as well. Highest total on the board. They were both 230. The Warriors and the Sixers game was like 230, but it's actually come down to 227.5 or so. But the Pacers and the Rockets game is going up. and the T-Wolves, too. T-Wolves gave up $142 the other night. The Rockets gave up 130. You got to love this, Tony. Houston Rockets have taken 58 three-point They took 58 three-point shots the other night.
History of the NBA.
Yeah, they hit 22 of them. And I got Eric Gordon in my lineup tonight. He's taken 34 three-point shots, Tony, in the last three games.
You know what happens is they get down the court in like 5 to 7 seconds, and one of these guys fires up a three because they have so many shooters now, they know they won't get the ball back. So Gordon's fired up, Lou Williams is fired up, James Harden's fired up. I'll tell you what, this offense is what D'Antonio coaches. He's got everything he wants now. I think you can take any of these guys, they can go off on any night, but they're the true tournament settings, right? Because they could make the shots and put up 30 fantasy points, or they could only get 5 shots because Ryan Anderson or Harden goes off and you get left out. So limit your exposure to these guys and bang them in tournaments.
All right, before we get out of here, I wanted to play Karl-Anthony Towns. You mentioned the Greek Freak. I think Towns is in a great spot. Yes. He's going to beat up on his former Kentucky buddy, Cauley Stein. It's going to be no match for him. He's going to rack it up, but he's a little pricey. So I went with Wiggins instead. With this T-Wolf offense, great fantasy offense right now. It's funny. Thibodeau's known as a defensive guy, but they're still an offensive team.
It was the weirdest thing. They brought Thibodeau in because this team was so poor defensively, and they've actually improved because last year they were the worst, and so they're like 19th now, so there is some improvement. But they can play offense, and I'll tell you right now, you can go Karl-Anthony Towns, you can go Wiggins, and don't sleep on Ricky Rubio as well in this contest. I think all these guys against the Sacramento Kings will get up and down the court. The Kings are going to play small in this one. This is going to be no match for them. They're going to win this game on the road. They're going to put up, I think that 209 total is low too as well.
Yeah, I'm betting the over actually. You know what? I like Wiggins better when he was $6,900, but he's putting up superstar numbers now. He's putting up numbers that a guy you pay $10,000, $11,000 for, and you're getting him for $8,000. You know what I mean? $8,200. So it's not priced out yet. We got to get out of here. Thanks, Tony.
Good night.
There's Tony Sicada. We'll come back with our lineup of the day and our plays of the day. All right. All right, let's get to our DK lineup of the night. Let's start off with a basketball game, which is the lowest total of the night. So people are going to be put off by this. But Whiteside and Dragic both put up huge freaking numbers on a nightly basis, man. All right, you know, Dragic, guy averages 20.6 assists and 4 rebounds a game. All right, that's basically like superstar-type numbers. He's going to give us 30, 35 minimum. We're going to get our value back tonight. All right, the Houston Rockets, these guys have they took 58 three-point shots the other night, man. You know, Eric Gordon has taken 34 three-point shots over the last three games, hitting 11 of them. We have the highest total on the board tonight at 230.5. This game's going to be a track meet. Gordon is going to give us our value for sure. Andrew Wiggins, one of the hottest players in the National Basketball Association. And in fact, he just broke a Minnesota Timberwolves record, which he scored 20 or more points in 17 consecutive games. He's routinely putting up 50-plus DK points a night. I like the spot tonight against Sacramento. Michael Beasley, Chris Middleton was left behind in Milwaukee, not playing. Beasley's starting. He's in. He's going to get a ton of minutes. He's going to give us a fantasy point per minute. You look at Beasley's numbers, man. The guy plays 32 minutes, he gives you 32 DK points. He plays 28 minutes, he gives you 28 points. For $5,200, it's a nice play. It'll be a higher scoring game tonight against the Cavaliers. Serge Ibaka. I was wondering how Ibaka was going to mesh with the Raptors. Great pickup, but usually it takes a couple of games. Well, they've thrown his ass into the deep end, man. He's played 70 minutes. He's played 70 minutes in two games. All right? It's amazing. And he's put up big numbers, actually, as well. Dropped 27 in his debut against the Celtics. Went off for 41 DK points last night against the Portland Trailblazers. Porzingis is out. Knicks soft up front. Ibaka goes off tonight. Big game. Monte Ellis, we take him all the time, but he's $4,000, and he's playing in the highest total game of the evening. Tyreek Evans, Sacramento. He's been moved into the starting lineup right now. It's bombs away for Tyreek. He's put up 53 DK points in the two games back. He'll start to put up more as he gets more comfortable. And keep your eye on the Cleveland Cavaliers situation. But you guys know the deal. With no Love, with no James, it's Kyrie time. And Kyrie goes off and puts up big numbers. I like Kyrie. We ought to be quick with our plays of the day on the way out here. Knicks are beat up. Raptors, I don't love it. They're back-to-back nights. But the Raptors starting to put it together a little bit. The depth of Ibaka and Tucker really helps. I like the Raptors minus the three tonight. Dallas Mavericks, I had them the other night against the Pelicans. They got it done, but it's going to be a hell of a lot tougher against Miami tonight. I think it's a good spot for the Heat. We'll lay to 1 point. Pacers Rockets, over 230.5 points. T-Wolves and Kings, going to be a higher scoring game, over 210. West Virginia crushed Baylor a couple of weeks ago. Payback tonight. Baylor gets it done. Vaughn.